There's a time and a place for a fillet of fish. But breakfast is for sausage biscuits. McDonald's breakfast comes first. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Possibility means you have a chance.
Passion opens the door to all possibilities.
When I feel like anything's possible, I feel kind of giddy.
I want to be an astronaut,
an artist,
an actress,
to visit another country.
All I need is a backpack and a pair of shoes, and I'll find a way.
I'm able to do anything I set my mind to.
I've never felt like more things are possible than right now.
In the right shoes, anything's possible.
DSW, countless shoes at bragworthy prices. Imagine the possibilities.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed, or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
This message is sponsored by Greenlight. With school out, summer is the perfect time to teach our kids real-world money skills they'll use forever. Greenlight is a debit card and the number one family finance and safety app used by millions of families, helping kids learn how to save, invest, and spend wisely. Parents can send their kids money and track their spending and saving, while kids build money confidence and skills in fun ways. Start your risk-free Greenlight trial today at Greenlight.com/iHeart. That's Greenlight.com/iHeart.
You are listening to continuing coverage of the trial of Chad Daybell from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast. Let's go back to the courtroom.
All right. Good morning, everyone. We're on the record on Fremont County KCR 2221-1623, State of Idaho versus Chad Guy Daybell. I'll note that the attorneys are present. The state is here, represented by the prosecution, the defense, and the defendant. I'll further introduce them in a moment. Is the state ready to proceed this morning?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you.
Is the defense ready to proceed?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you.
Thank you. Before we begin with further voir dire examination, let me inquire of the state, is there any objection to the manner in which the jury panel has been recalled and seated today?
No, Your Honor.
Any objection from the defense?
No, Your Honor. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, then thank you for returning this morning. You've been recalled as prospective jurors in this case now before us. I'll again reintroduce my court staff. My name is Stephen W. Boyce. I'm the district judge of Fremont County, Idaho. I'm in charge of the courtroom in this trial. Court clerk here assisting today is Shannon Holstein. She's taking minutes of the proceedings. We'll be administering oaths to you this morning as well. The marshals here assisting with courtroom order and helping the jury movement are Steve Holmes, Ken Bache, and James Ravello. Court reporter this morning is Mary Fox, who's taking a stenographic record of everything said during the trial proceedings. And my staff attorney is Courtney Stallings, who's seated to the far right over there at a table. She assists me from time to time with legal research and administrative issues. Each of you, 16 jurors here, have been qualified to serve as a juror of this court, and each of you filled out a questionnaire that's been reviewed now by counsel in the court, and it was determined to recall you for further questioning. The thing we're doing in this trial at this stage is to select a total of 18 jurors, compromising 12 jurors and 6 alternates from among you. At this time, the clerk will now read a roll call of the jury, not referring by name, but referring by your red card number. So I'll have the clerk do that. If you would just hold your number up once your number is called, we'll make sure we all know where you're seated and that this is the proper seating for this group.
Once I call your number, if you can audibly answer that you're present. Juror number 11, say present.
Present.
Juror number 27.
Present.
Juror number 31.
Present.
Juror number 41.
Present.
Juror number 48?
Present.
Juror number 56?
Present.
Juror number 67?
Present.
Juror number 121?
Present.
Juror number 146? Juror number 186?
Present.
Juror number 219?
Present.
Juror number 249? Juror number 296?
Present.
Juror number 321?
Present.
Juror number 348? Juror 394?
Present.
Thank you.
All right, to assist you in understanding and participating in the jury selection process, I'll now reintroduce you to the parties and their attorneys and briefly summarize what this case is about. When I introduce an individual, please stand and briefly face the jury panel, then we'll take your seat. This case has been brought by the state of Idaho. I'll sometimes refer to the state as the prosecution. The state's represented in this trial by Lindsay Blake, Fremont County Prosecutor. Rob Wood is the Madison County Prosecutor, and Special Assistant Prosecutors Ingrid Beatty and Rocky Wixom. The defendant in this case is Chad Guy Daybell, who's represented by his attorney, John Pryor, if the defense of his case. This case is a criminal matter, which means the defendant is charged by the state of Idaho with a violation of the law. I previously read to you a summary of the charges in the amended indictment, and you were here last week to complete your questionnaires. With regard to the defendant, the state of Idaho alleges that Chad Guy Daybell committed the crimes of count one, conspiracy to commit first degree murder and grand theft by deception. Count two, first degree murder. Count three, conspiracy to commit first degree murder and grand theft by deception. Count four, first degree murder. Count five, conspiracy to commit first degree murder. Count six, first degree murder. Count seven, insurance fraud. Count nine, insurance fraud. Mr. Daybell has pled not guilty to these charges. Please remember, this is simply a description of the charges. It is not evidence. Under our law and system of justice, every defendant is presumed to be innocent. This means two things. First, the state has the burden of proving the defendant guilty. The state has that burden throughout the trial. The defendant is never required to prove his innocence, nor does the defendant ever have to produce any evidence at all. Second, the state must prove the alleged crime beyond a reasonable doubt. A reasonable doubt is not a mere possible or imaginary doubt. It is a doubt based on reason and common sense. It may arise from a careful and impartial consideration of all the evidence or from a lack of evidence. If after considering all the evidence you have a reasonable doubt about the defendant's guilt, you must find the defendant not guilty. I'll next discuss your duty as jurors. Duty of the jury is to determine the facts and then apply the law set forth in the instructions I will later give you to those facts. In this way, you will decide the case. In applying the court's instructions as to the controlling law, you must follow those instructions regardless of your opinion of what the law is or what the law should be or what any lawyer may state the law to be. During the course of this trial, including the jury selection process, you are instructed that you are not to discuss this case among yourselves or with anyone else, including use of email, text messaging, social media, or any other form of communication, electronic or otherwise. Do not conduct any personal investigation or look up any information from any source, including the internet. Do not form an opinion as to the merits of the case until after the case has been submitted to you for your determination. This time, I'll instruct the clerk to administer an oath to the jury panel. The clerk will now swear the entire jury panel for this voir dire examination. If each of you would please stand and raise your right hand.
You solemnly swear or affirm that you truthfully answer such questions as may be asked of you by court or counsel, touching upon your qualifications to sit as a trial juror in the Crosby-Allen trial, so help you God.
Thank you. Please be seated. I'll note that each juror took the oath just now. Clerk has impaneled 16 prospective jurors for questioning in small groups today. We've gone through their roll call as well. At this time, I'll ask the state, will the state stipulate that the jurors were properly called and impaneled today?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you.
Will the defense stipulate as well?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you.
All right, thank you, counsel. Next, I'll inquire of the marshals here I did require that the jurors complete a jury affirmation that they've not gone back to review or investigate the case since they filled out the questionnaires. Did each juror complete an affirmation?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you for following the court's admonishment and completing your affirmation today. In this part of the jury selection process, then, you'll be asked questions touching on your qualifications to serve as jurors in this particular case. This part of the case is known as voir dire examination. Voir dire is an ancient Anglo-Norman term dating back hundreds of years to the origins of the common law. In Old French, it simply means to speak the truth. Voir dire examination is for the purpose of determining if your decision in this case would in any way be influenced by opinions which you now hold, or by some personal experience or special knowledge which you may have concerning the subject matter of this trial. The object is to obtain 12 trial jurors who will impartially try the issues of this case upon the evidence presented in the courtroom without being influenced by other factors. Please understand this questioning is not for the purpose of prying into your affairs for personal reasons, but only for the purpose of obtaining an impartial jury. Whenever you need to answer a question, please raise your hand when called upon to speak. Please identify yourself by that red card number you have. Because these proceedings are being stenographically recorded by a court reporter, also please speak clearly and give audible answers such as yes or no, rather than, for example, nodding your head. In addition, please wait for the person you are addressing to finish the sentence before speaking so the court reporter doesn't have to deal with two people speaking at the same time. Importantly, if you have any answer to questions and other questions I'll identify that will either be embarrassing for you to answer publicly or you think are best answered in a more private setting, the court will arrange that. Similarly, if you have an answer that you think could prejudice other prospective jurors, for example, of information you may know about this case, please refrain from discussing that in front of the other jurors, and we will talk to you about that individually as well, outside of the presence of the other jurors. As I mentioned then, if you have knowledge of this case from pretrial media or coverage or publicity, please don't discuss any specific facts of that in front of the other jurors. And there is a special instruction that's been given in this case, which I'll now give to each of you together. And the special instruction is as follows. The defendant, Chad Guy Daybell, has been charged in the amended indictment with certain counts of entering into a conspiracy with Lori Vallow Daybell and or Alex Cox. The crime of conspiracy involves an agreement by two or more persons to commit a crime. You must only consider the evidence against the defendant in this case and should not speculate as to any other case or legal proceedings involving the alleged co-conspirators. You must remember that the defendant has the presumption of innocence, and you must consider his guilt or innocence based solely on the evidence provided in this case. That concludes the court's special instruction. At this time, I would also instruct the attorneys for both parties to avoid repeating any questions already asked by the court. The attorneys do, however, have the right to direct follow-up questions to a juror regarding a juror's response to the court's previous questions. The jury should be aware that during and following this voir dire examination, one or more of you may be challenged. Each side has challenges, what are called for cause. That means they can ask that a juror be excused for some specific reason. Later, there will also be what are called peremptory challenges, and that means each side can challenge a juror and ask they be excused without giving any reason for the dismissal. If you are excused by either side, please do not feel offended or feel your honesty or integrity has been questioned, because it is not. I'll now begin the court's portion of the voir dire process, after which the attorneys for both parties will be given an opportunity to make their own voir dire inquiries. Those of you who are not called should pay close attention to the questions being asked here, because you may be later called upon to answer those same questions. First question I'll ask you all as a group, when you completed your questionnaire last week, I'm going back to that. Are the answers given by each of you in the jury information forms true and accurate still? Okay, everyone's answered affirmatively. Let's next talk about the issue of the time commitment that may be required in the trial in this case. If you are required to serve as a juror here, it will be for a period of approximately 8 to 10 weeks. Would this time frame create a serious hardship upon you or your family or your business or profession or occupation so as to prevent you from rendering service as a fair and impartial juror in this case? Is there anyone that has a response for that question?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Please raise your red card. Juror number 249, express your concern, please, regarding the timing of the trial.
My work only allows approximately 8 hours, 8 times. After that, it would be all entirely for receiving having to pay.
Okay. And are we going to have a roving microphone, perhaps, for jurors? If not, we can get one set up for the next group. Juror number 249, I was able to hear your concern about limited time frame involving work. Have you had an opportunity to discuss if they've got any other policy, if you are in a longer trial such as this case that may allow for additional time off if you were required to serve?
I did read the policy, but because I did found out about this late last week that I was selected. I simply went online for our policy, our team member handbook as well, and read up on it because I was concerned that this wasn't going to be a long time. So I double checked the policy, and that's what it states. Yeah.
All right. Given the concern at this point, let me pass over first to the state and then the defense. If you have an additional voir dire, this time specifically on the issue of a potential hardship for Juror 249.
And, Your Honor, the state actually did have a question regarding a potential hardship with regard to Juror 249. It's one that hasn't been talked about, but on the questionnaire, there was an indication that there was a May camping trip planned, but we just didn't have a lot of details. So we had actually planned on inquiring further regarding that hardship.
Okay.
If the court wants to get into that, the state does not have an objection given what he's indicating his work policy is either.
Okay. Well, I'll allow you to return to that issue then in your individual voir dire. Juror number 249, I'll let the attorneys come back to you in their portion of voir dire to further question the hardship issue you've raised. Is there anyone else that would also express a concern of hardship if they were required to serve for that time frame?
Yes.
Okay, we've got a few more. Juror numbers 67.
Okay. I'm a sole provider in my family. My wife has an autoimmune disorder, and so
it would be difficult for me to do this, and I'd be losing out on a lot of money, and my job also would probably lay me off because I'm an operator and they're already short-staffed, and that's what I was told.
When you say that's what you were told, did you discuss the potential of having to serve in this case since you filled out your questionnaire?
Yes.
And could you be a little more specific about you don't need to name it, but the occupation and what your employer may have related to you?
The occupation is with alarm codes. I was on the central station, so I just answer a lot of alarms for places all over the country. And what I was told was that they're extremely short-staffed. If I was gone for 10 weeks, they would probably have to let me go because they'd have to have somebody else take my place.
All right. With that particular concern raised, I am going to pass over for additional questioning at this time from both the state and then the defense. Does the state have any further questions for this juror number 67 in regards to the state of hardship?
We don't have any further questions, Your Honor. We would have no objection to this juror being excused based on the hardship expressed today.
All right. From the defense then, Mr. Pryor.
Judge, there'd be no objection to having this juror excused.
All right. Well, juror 67, if you are facing loss of employment over this, the court would find that would qualify as an undue hardship that would prevent your service in this case, given the length of the trial. So the court thanks you for your service for coming in this morning. I'll allow you to be excused. Please drop off your copy of your questionnaire with the bailiff on your way. I believe juror 348 raised their card as well. Juror 348, you've heard the questioning about the trial length. What's the issue you would have in relation to that? Let's get that mic to you.
We have two family events that will transpire here during this time or directly after, one of which is my daughter's graduation from college. I did note these on the questionnaire. In the circumstances with her graduation, that would be at the beginning of May. We were not able to have any kind of graduation celebration for her from high school, as that was 2020. So we were all looking forward to that as something we would all participate in. As well, my mother passed away in February, and I am responsible as executor for her estate to prepare documents. I'm working with lawyers on the East Coast, which makes it a challenge as far as the time difference is concerned, as well as planning for her service, which will take place in June. Again, that is taking place on the East Coast. And I am responsible for planning that event as well. So those are the two circumstances, as I noted on the questionnaire.
And could you specify again, is it the first weekend of May that the graduation would take place?
Yes.
Is that on weekdays, or is that going to be on the weekend?
The graduation takes place on a Friday. That would also involve transportation down on either Wednesday or Thursday, as it's out of state.
All right. Counsel, I'm going to, again, inquire of you. I know we're skipping ahead. You'll get your own individual voir dire, but on the narrow issue of a hardship expressed with juror 348, does the state have any additional inquiry?
No, Your Honor. We would have no objection to this juror being excused. I do note on the questionnaire she had indicated the graduation would be the first weekend of May, including Thursday to Sunday.
All right. Any voir dire from the defense on the issue?
No, Judge, I was also aware that she had the obligations that required her to travel out of town and also to excuse her. Thank you.
Okay. Well, between the combination of that planned graduation and your services as executor of an estate and that both being expressed in your sworn questionnaire, the court does find there's a rationale here for dismissal based on a hardship given the length of the trial and the timing. So juror 348, you can be excused with the thanks of the court. Thank you for providing your service here up to this point, and please drop the questionnaire off on the way out with the bailiff. Were there any other jurors that had an expressed concern over a hardship at this point? Okay, juror number 321.
I have not looked into the policy as far as like amount of time, but it would be a financial hardship if that length amount of time went without me working.
All right, I'm going to note juror 321 that you've expressed a concern over hardship. I'll pass on that at this time and allow for the attorneys to conduct some individual voir dire further on the topic if they so wish. So we'll come back to that. Anyone else have a concern? Juror number 296.
Good morning, Your Honor. I am currently in school on Mondays and Wednesdays, and CWI would conflict for the next 5 weeks. I put on my questionnaire that it's possible that I could take online courses or switch to an online course, but not entirely sure of that policy.
Okay. I will note your concern as well. I'm going to allow for some additional voir dire from the parties before we make a determination on that. Anyone else have a stated concern for the hardship? Okay, thank you. Let me next discuss any previous knowledge you may have of this case. As I mentioned before, if you do know something specific you've heard in the media or otherwise, please refrain from stating specific facts about that, but we do want to go into that issue. So first, let me see, I guess, by raise of your cards, other than what you were told when you came in to fill out that questionnaire and further advice today, do you know anything about this case, either through your own personal knowledge or by discussions with anyone else or from media information you've received? Is there anyone that knows about the case? Okay, if you'll hold those up for a moment, we'll know. So we've got juror 3, 2, 1.
Question.
The question generally is just, do you know something about this case other than what you've learned by coming in for the questionnaire last week or today? All right, so on the back row, 321, 296, 219, 249, 146, 121. On the front row, we've got jurors 56, 48, 41, 31, and 27. So the majority of the group here, which is why I give that instruction, what we don't want to do is start seeing what everyone knows about the case. We'll talk to you individually about that. Let me ask some specific questions for you then without getting into those details. But then, is there anyone here that believes they already have a state of mind with regard to the charges or some knowledge you already have about the case that would prevent you from being impartial in this case? In other words, has anyone you think already drawn some opinion that maybe the defendant is guilty just based on what you know or what the charges are? All right, we've got a juror number 121 who brought that concern up. In order to further get into that discussion, we'll talk to you individually so we can delve into that. Anyone else that thinks they've already perhaps made their mind up in some way about guilt or innocence in this case? All right, we've also got juror number 48. We will discuss that with you individually as well. For those of you that do know something about the case, the next question is, do you feel you could eliminate or disregard what you've heard or read pertaining to the case and render an impartial verdict based solely on the evidence you hear in court today? All right, the remaining jurors then indicate they would be able to do that, and I'll allow the attorneys to follow up with Fort Dyer on that subject.
Judge, could we approach for all of those?
Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. We're back on the record now, continuing with Fort Dyer of this group. Next issue the court's going to talk about with the prospective jurors is the subject matter of this case. Court has read to you a summary of the charges. Those include charges involving murder, conspiracy, and insurance fraud. Is there anything in particular about those charges for any one of you that would make it impossible or difficult for you to fairly and objectively evaluate the evidence in this case and to render a fair and impartial verdict? So the question is, would that make it impossible or difficult? If that is the way you feel, please raise your red card. Okay, none of the jurors responded affirmatively to that. I next have some questions that may seem obvious, but they're required by our statutes for me to go through as well. Let's talk about relation or acquaintance to the defendant. Are any of you related by blood or marriage to the defendant, Mr. Daybell? Do you know him or her from any business or social relationship? If you do, please raise your red card. All right, no one answered affirmatively to that. Let's talk about the relationships you may have with any alleged victim, defendant, or attorneys here. Does the relationship of guardian and ward, master and servant, employer and employee, creditor and debtor, landlord and tenant, boarder or lodger exist between any of you or any of the attorneys involved in this case? So raise your red card if one of these lawyers is your landlord, for example. All right, no one has responded affirmatively to that. Are any of you involved in any kind of a legal proceeding, including a civil action against the defendant? No affirmative response. Have any of you ever brought any kind of a criminal complaint against the defendant or been accused of a crime by any of these prosecutors now present today? There's no affirmative response to that. Do any of you have any kind of an attorney-client relationship with any of the attorneys here or with Mr. Pryor or his law firm? Okay, no one responded to that. Do any of you have any kind of a relationship by blood or marriage to any of the lawyers in this case, or do you know the lawyers from any other professional business or social relationship? All right, no one indicated they know the attorneys or have any kind of relationship that would be prohibited. This next question is a general question, but let me ask, have any of you ever formed or expressed an unqualified opinion that the defendant is guilty or not guilty of the offense charged? Okay, no one indicated they've got an opinion. Do any of you have any bias or prejudice either for or against the defendant in this case, Mr. Daybell? No one responded to that. Are there any of you who would be unwilling to follow the court's instructions to you, the jury, as to the law that you must apply in determining this case? No one responded to that. Now, in this case, we will be asking you further questions individually about the section of the questionnaire you filled out relating to the death penalty. So I understand that may come up here. We will talk about that individually, but notwithstanding, I'll ask the group here, do any of you have a religious or moral position that would make it impossible for you to sit in judgment of another or to render a fair and impartial verdict in this case? Okay, no one responded affirmatively to that. Are there any of you that, if selected as a juror in this case, would be unwilling or unable to render a fair and impartial verdict based upon the evidence presented in this courtroom and the law as instructed by the court? All right, no one indicates they would be unwilling or unable to render a fair and impartial verdict. Kind of a catch-all question here. Do any of you have any other reason why you cannot give this case your full undivided attention and render a fair and impartial verdict? Very well, no one responded to that. That concludes the court section of group voir dire for this group. At this time, then, I'll permit the state to conduct its voir dire of the group. After that, the defense. Will that be you, Ms. White?
Your Honor, Mr. Wood will be starting the voir dire process.
All right, Mr. Wood, if you'd like to commence with the state's voir dire, you may do that at this time.
Thank you. And is it all right if I do so from the podium?
It is.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, again, my name is Rob Wood. I represent the people of Madison County, Idaho. And just as a reminder, if I ask you anything today that makes you uncomfortable and you would rather answer it privately, just let us know. We want you to be comfortable, and we need you to give full answers and fully truthful answers. The defendant is entitled to a fair trial, and we only get there. And the state's entitled to a fair trial. We only get there if you're being totally honest with us. And so I'm going to start by asking juror number 321, what do you think of when I say the phrase brutal honesty?
I believe that just means not mincing your words, just no matter what, just tell them the 100% complete truth by Al Robinson.
All right. Does anyone else have a different definition of brutal honesty? But not mincing your words. Can everybody agree that telling the full truth, not mincing your words, is a good definition? Okay. And we need you today to be brutally honest. There's just a quick analogy I like to use. Who By raise of hand, who here has flown on an airplane? Everybody's flown on an airplane, right? And you get on the airplane and that pilot, you know, you get strapped in, they give you the safety warning, and the pilot tells you when he's going to land that plane approximately and where he's going to do it. How many of you would feel comfortable if the pilot said, I might be able to land this plane? You're all smiling. Would anybody feel comfortable with that pilot? Okay, so ladies and gentlemen, today we need you to land the plane. And what we mean by that is not a specific destination, but that you're completely, again, completely honest. It's that important. The court asked you about following the law. Is anybody here like and enjoy every rule, law, and regulation you live under? Nobody does, right? Does anybody just by a raise of hand, can you, not that you need to tell us what it is, but think of a law or a rule that you think is unfair. Everybody, you can think of a law or a rule that's unfair, great. Multiple people feel that way. In this courtroom, the court will give you the law that applies in this case. And you may like that, you may not like that law. But for fairness to this defendant and for fairness to the people of Idaho, we all have to agree, follow that law. So even considering that maybe you won't like the law that you get, maybe it doesn't go with your gut, can this defendant and can the state all rely on you to follow the law as it's given by this court? If you agree yes, can you hold up your red card? This is important. 121, I saw a little bit of hesitation. Was that accurate or was that just me? There is some hesitation. Tell us about your hesitation. And thank you for your honesty.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you were going to get into this later, but my hesitation is with the death penalty issue. That's where I hesitate.
Okay. So, and we will talk about that. But thank you for bringing it up, and thank you for being honest. I'm going to just shift gears really quickly. Does anybody here believe everything they hear on the internet or see on the internet? I'm the only one. So does anybody here believe everything they hear on the news? Everybody understand that the news is not always accurate. I'm not saying that to offend any reporters who might be here, but we all understand that facts change sometimes, right? And you might hear a story one day, and some of those facts are different the next day. This case has had a massive amount of media attention. And the judge asked you this, but we just want to check again. Is there anyone here who has any concerns of what they've heard before? And we don't want to go into a lot of detail now. We'll get into it later. But what they've heard before is going to cause them to not be able to give this defendant a fair trial. All right. Some of you talked about hardship, and we're just going to go over that really quick. Juror 249. If I recall, and if I say it incorrectly, just feel free to correct me. You get about 2 weeks of paid juror time. Is that accurate?
That's correct.
Okay. If it's all right, if I ask you the sole provider in your home?
Yes.
Okay. And is it fair to say that you and your family rely on your income?
Yes.
Okay. And have you, I forgot, did you speak with your employer about this specific issue?
I have. I just let my supervisor know that this could potentially be a long-term commitment. And then when I was thinking about it a little further, I thought I better delve into what the current policy says, stated. And that's when I found out that. And they only account for 80 hours for it. So.
Okay.
And after that, you're basically on your own. Either you have to use your vacation, which nobody has 10 weeks of vacation,
right?
Or
Would you see that as an undue hardship for you that would create difficulty for your family?
Yes.
Your Honor, the state would move to excuse juror 249 for hardship.
I'd like to hear a response from the defense, and if you have any additional voir dire, Mr. Pryor, you can do that as well.
Nothing additional, Judge. We'll stipulate.
All right. Based on the comments made by juror 249 as it relates to an employment hardship and financial with the length of this trial, the court will agree that the juror will be stricken for cause based on a hardship that includes his service. So thank you for appearing today and for performing your service as a juror. You can be excused and please drop your questionnaire with the bailiff.
Juror 296. You had spoken about potential hardship, and I noted in your questionnaire that you said you had school Mondays and Wednesdays but could do online classes. And you mentioned that, but I guess I'm not quite sure where it stands. Are you able to do online classes to finish that?
I'm not entirely sure, but I know they offer online classes for the classes that I'm currently in. So I'm assuming they could probably move me to the online classes. The only issue that I have is the lecturing I can do online.
All right. And it's not school 5 days a week, just the 2 days a week?
Just two.
You mind if I ask how many classes?
Two.
Two.
Biology class.
All right. And so if with the court's schedule of getting out at 3:30, do you think that would be something you could make work?
Yes.
Okay. And so would it be an undue hardship to be on this jury with your school?
Not that I'm aware.
Okay, thank you. Juror 321, you had mentioned a hardship. Could you, and I apologize, I kind of can't remember exactly what you said a few minutes ago. Can you tell us what that was?
Yeah, I'm just unsure as far as, because I've not spoken with the employer about the length of this trial I may go. I just know that it would be unpaid time off.
Okay. Are you a sole provider in your home?
Yes.
Okay. So you haven't spoken with them yet. So are you sure that it would be unpaid time off, or do they have some type of juror policy where they pay for you while you serve on a jury?
Honestly, I'm not aware. They might possibly have a policy, I just don't know about it.
Do you think that's information you could find out in the next couple of days and notify the court if there was a change?
Absolutely.
Okay. Thank you. I also did note in your, I believe it was in your questionnaire, that you wanted to see some college games of one of your children. Is that you? Am I confused?
Yes.
Okay. And where are those games?
They're in Oregon City. Oregon.
Okay. And is baseball?
Yes.
Okay. What year is your son?
He's a sophomore.
Okay. And I'm not trying to be insensitive. Being a juror is hard for everyone and inconvenient, but if you weren't able to see some of those games, would you be able to see him next year?
Yes.
And so would it be an undue hardship to miss some of those games?
No.
Thank you. The court spoke with you briefly about the nature of this case. This is a case about murder and conspiracy to commit murder and insurance fraud. Two of the alleged victims in this case are underage children, a 7-year-old and a 16-year-old. And the other alleged victim is a mother. There will be some autopsy photographs in this case, and they are hard to look at. There's no way around that. But does anybody here think that seeing those would automatically sway them one way or the other, or that they'd be able to objectively weigh that evidence against all the other evidence? Did you raise your hand?
No.
Okay. This is important. If you guys can raise your cards, if your answer is yes, would you be able to still weigh all the evidence properly, even if it's difficult to look at those pictures? So, juror 48, oh, Okay.
Thinking.
Or what are you thinking? Do you think you'll be able to do that?
I just want to make sure I understand the question. If I could see the photos and not be swayed one way or another, continue to weigh the totality of the evidence.
That's yes. And then I just have a couple more questions, Your Honor. I know Ms. Blake has a couple of questions. Juror 294, in your questionnaire, you said that you marked a box saying that you think a person, who doesn't testify is probably guilty.
Yes.
So do you understand that the state has the burden of proof?
I do. I was just being honest. You know, like just from my gut, yes.
Yeah, and we want you to be honest.
Yeah.
And we appreciate that. There's nothing wrong with that. So you will get an instruction, and you'll be told by this court that the defendant doesn't have to say anything. The defendant doesn't have to prove anything. It's 100% on the state. And so is that feeling you have, is that something you could follow the rule and the law the court gives you and set that feeling aside and not hold it against the defendant if he doesn't?
Yes.
I'll just correct the record there for a moment. That's your 394.
Oh, I said 294. Yes. I apologize. That's 394. Fine. Thank you.
Can I take this moment to mention hardship?
Please do. Okay. Yeah.
It's not necessarily hardship. There's a family vacation, family reunion scheduled for week 10, June 6th through 10th, but travel would be needed on either side to Arkansas. It's not a hardship, but I thought I'd just mention that. I'm not losing work. I didn't anticipate checking on my jury duty leave for work, so that's an open question in my mind as to if I can take the whole time, that's acceptable, or if it actually is a restricted amount of time like other people in this group I should know by today.
Okay, and if that does create a hardship, will you let the court know?
Yes.
Juror 41, you had marked something similar on your questionnaire that you want the defendant to testify. And I'm just going to ask the same thing. Do you understand that only the state has the burden of proof in this case? And that it's the state's job to prove something. The defendant doesn't have to prove anything. Okay. And so even though you have that feeling, is that something you can set aside and follow the law and the rules that the court gives you and not hold that against the defendant? Okay. Your Honor, at this time, I know Ms. Blake has a few questions, so I turn this time over to her.
Very well.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for being back with us today. I know you were all here last week, and this is a bit of a process, so we appreciate you hanging in there with us. And I will try to be fairly brief because I know you've already had a lot of questions today. So the judge has already started to give you some instructions, and as you go through this process, he will give you more instructions. So I'd like to talk to you a little bit about, I have a son, and usually in the mornings, if I ask him what he wants to eat, he tells me cheesy eggs. And there's a very specific recipe that I have to use. So it's the eggs and the milk, and he likes quite a bit of cheese, and then some salt and pepper. But if I try to modify that recipe, he doesn't always like it. So I don't know, have any of you had that experience where whether you're cooking or doing something else for a kid or a family member, they like things just done a certain way. Would all of you agree? And turning to juror 27, can you give me an example of something like that?
Yes, I have four kids, and they are very opinionated of how I cook and prepare their toast and their sandwiches and how I cut it. And so, yeah.
You can relate.
Relate, yeah.
And so even if you think there's a better way to do it, do you sometimes just follow what your kids are asking for?
Well, in relation to food, yes. If it's something that's going to injure them, no.
Yes, I'll keep it with the food example. So if it's food, they want the crust cut off, something like that, you'll do it because that's what they're asking you to do.
Yes, I mean, unless there's a nutritional opinion I have, but if it's something simple, sure.
And in the back there, juror 186, I think I also saw you nod. Can you give us an example of something like that?
Same thing as you guys. I have four kids as well, and they like their food a certain way, especially when they're little. Anything to get them to eat.
And if you know a better way to do it, or maybe you would add something because it gives it better flavor, do you sometimes follow what your kids want?
I try to give them, sneak something in there that maybe I think will taste better, try to change their mind. very little.
And so with this court, because I'm like a kid, we're going to get instructions from the judge. And if the judge gives you instructions, they may say, these are the specific elements of a crime. And sometimes it's easy to look at that and say, well, that doesn't make a lot of sense. Or if you added this, it would make it a little bit better. Would everyone here agree that regardless of what you may think with the rule and instruction given by the judge, that you could absolutely follow what he outlines? Would everyone agree that you would hold the state to the burden of the specific elements outlined by the judge? So even if you might say, this would make it a little more nutritional this time, or hey, I might sneak a new flavor in, everyone could refrain from doing that if it was an instruction from the court. Does anyone have concerns with doing that? Thank you. And as I talk about, the judge is going to give you instructions, and some of those instructions are going to be regarding the burden of proof being on the state, and then they will also be the elements. With regard to charges of conspiracy and first-degree murder and conspiracy to commit first-degree murder, one of the elements is not going to be that the state has to prove the cause of death, meaning the state is not going to be required to prove exactly what caused the death of a person. Our element would be to prove that it was a homicide. Does anyone have concerns if you were to be presented evidence that someone was killed but the state did not provide a specific cause? No concerns. So if the state put on evidence that it was a homicide, but not the exact cause of that homicide, that wouldn't cause anyone concern. Because again, you'll have instructions from the judge. 394, I see your card.
I'm trying to think that they're proving it was a homicide. Explain how.
If you're given an instruction, though, that says that that's not a requirement, would you be able to follow that instruction, or would it be difficult for you?
I think it would be difficult, just based on my question.
So in this case, you are going to hear from quite a few witnesses. And some of the witnesses may have different religious views than you have. Does anyone have concerns that it would be difficult for you to listen to or give proper weight to someone's testimony based on them holding different religious views? Would anyone have problems if someone held different views in general, again, just with being able to weigh their testimony? And you're also going to be given some instructions, actually back that up. So if you were sitting in here today and the window wasn't there, or they put the blinds down and you couldn't see outside, but you, when you came inside, everything was dry, everything was clear. And then as you enter the building, you see the sky starting to get a little bit dark. It's starting to turn gray. You come in here, they close the blinds, you can't see outside, and you go outside and there's water on your car and there's water on the pavement, water on the grass, everything's wet. What would you be able to determine what had happened? I see some nods. Juror 296, what would you determine had happened? And would you determine that even if it had quit raining by the time you got outside? So there would be enough there without you actually personally, physically observing the rain. And 321, I saw you nodding as well. Similar?
So.
And so would everyone agree, you may hear the term circumstantial evidence. Even if you don't see something happen, there could still be other evidence to support that. And would everyone be willing to weigh that evidence? Because again, as jurors, part of your job is going to be to weigh all the evidence and give it the weight you feel that it's due as you're listening to all the testimony of the evidence come in. Anyone have concerns about their ability to do that? I can have just a moment. The state has no additional questions, Jim.
All right, that will conclude the state's portion of voir dire of the group. Mr. Pryor, you may do so on behalf of your client now.
Good morning, Mr. My name is John Pryor, and I'm representing Mr. Gabriel today. I'm going to ask this question to all the folks. Before we start, I really want to talk to you about the fact that there's no wrong answer. What's more important than anything else is that tell the truth.
Mr. Pryor, apologies. Could you into the microphone a little more? We're barely getting your signal.
Thank and you. I'll turn it on. Does that help too?
That helps a lot.
At my age, Judge, technology is challenging the job, and I apologize. Can all of you folks hear me now? So I'll reiterate, the fact is that as jurors, you're
Your job is to judge the evidence. Your job is to make a determination, apply the facts to what the judge gives you as the law. But before we get there, what we have to do is go through this painstaking process of talking to you folks about some personal things and some private things, some of your thoughts and processes. And part of that is to, before we get there, is we really want to talk about just being honest and truthful about your position. There is no wrong position. If there are some people here who say Mr. Daybell is absolutely innocent, that's your position. If people feel that Mr. Daybell is absolutely guilty, that's your position. If you really haven't made up your mind, that's your position. But it's your position and it's your own individual position. And what's important is that you apply the facts, not as you see the group and go along with the group, but that you basically tell the truth and you speak your mind. This is your opportunity to say how you feel and to be honest about how you feel. Is there anybody who really doesn't understand that? Perfect. I must have been pretty clear and you can hear me now. That's wonderful. Before we get started, this is an unusual question I ask. And I ask this because I've had the opportunity to sit in that box a handful of times and over the number of years that I've been an adult. And this happened to me many, many years ago. I was 21 years old and in college, and the lawyer was involved in a criminal case. And he asked an unusual question. As soon as he got up there, he asked an unusual question. He said, "Is there anybody who just doesn't want to be here today?" And a number of us were hedging and moving and everything else. I thought, yeah, I don't want to be here. I don't really want to. Well, why don't you want to be here? Because I just don't want to be here. I just have so many other things in my life, and I have so many other distractions, and I have so many other processes. And I, you know, I was a college student, naive and wide-eyed, and I said, I understand the obligation to be a juror. I understand that it's something that we have to do as our civic duty, but I just don't feel like I can give the attention to this thing that I really think it deserves. And surprisingly enough, the lawyer said, well, thank you for being so brutally honest, and the judge let me go on my way. Now, I don't want to give all of you an opportunity to raise your hand when I ask this question, and please don't, if you really think you can give the attention. But is there any of you folks who quite honestly, you just don't want to be here today? And please be truthful with that question. You're all very excited to be here. And you're all very anxious to get involved in this. Okay, number 394. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, I definitely want to do my civic duty. I feel like that's the proper thing to do, and I'm thankful for everything that you guys do. I'm a year and a half, about a year and a half into a job building a team. We have one person, I'm a team lead, I've got one person under me. We're trying to hire another person. So I question whether my success in my job will be as good as it could be if I was there versus being out for potentially 10 months. And of course, I don't want to think deeply about a murder case, you know, just the content. But again, I want to do my civic duty, so that's kind of where I'm at.
And I appreciate that. Your job's important. You're a data engineer, if I remember right. I'm going off memory.
Yes.
My memory serves me that that's what you do as a data engineer. Is that right?
I am a data engineer.
I said data. It's data.
Yeah.
Back and forth.
And my wife's a part-time biller about 10 hours a week. So I'm the primary.
Do you have children?
Yes, we have three.
I remember that as well. I just wanted you to tell me that. Yeah. Okay. And do you really think this could potentially affect your occupation?
I don't know. I need to talk to my manager today and see realistically how this would impact either my future growth or the paid time off policy for jury duty.
Well, the one thing that caught my attention was that as a data engineer, and having been married, and she's going to kill me for announcing this to the world, I guess, that my ex-wife was an engineer, and it was everybody's smiling about that. I understand that when you're working on projects, that a lot of time those projects are particular to the individual engineer. Is that your position as well?
Yeah, we basically serve all areas of the business, whether it's product or finance or customer success. So they're long, they can be very short requests, but usually they run multiple weeks.
Okay. Is there anybody else who would like to, you know, provide me information about whether they just don't want to be here? And frankly, folks, there is no wrong answer. I can assure you that the story I told you about speaking up and saying I didn't want to be there, absolutely true. And then it was just one of these situations where I just felt like I couldn't provide the necessary attention. And that was going to be a 2 or 3 day trial. What we're dealing with in this case, folks, is a 10-week trial. And it's going to take a lot of time and it's going to take a lot of effort. And I want to make sure that all of you are going to be able to do that. That's a significant request from all of you. And all of us, the four prosecuting attorneys, the judge and myself, Mr. Daybell, we're asking you to put that kind of a commitment into this. And it's 10 weeks. It's 2.5 months of your life that we're going to be asking you to put forth. Juror number 27, you're shaking your head. Do you have any concerns or questions about that? Or thoughts, please?
No. I'm shaking my head in agreement that it is a big commitment, but feel if this is what you feel I should do, then that's just my duty to it.
And I guess I'd be clear on that. I welcome everybody's thoughts on that, and I don't want anyone to think that, well, you're doing this because it's what you feel I want you to do. In your own mind, and I can't evaluate what each of your life situations are. I'm given a very small description of facts, the questionnaire that was filled out, and the difficult situations that I have to determine, and sort of the four prosecuting attorneys who are working on this case. We have to determine with that small window of information what kind of impact this is going to have on you. That's very important, and I do spend time on this. I spend a lot of time. And I do that because the consequences are significant here. You've all read or heard the allegations against Mr. Daybell. And I just want to make sure that all of you are going to be able to put that time commitment in and spend the time to work on this significant project. And much like our friend 394, it's a significant project. So again, is there anybody who's having any hesitation? Please speak up. Please speak up now, because the time to change your mind later will become difficult. So I ask again, is there anyone who's having any concerns or hesitation? 121, please tell me what your thoughts are.
I mean, I feel kind of similar to what he said, where like I do recognize that it's, you know, my duty, and but I just think, like, I've just been thinking a lot about a lot of the troubling aspects of it. And that's a reason why, honestly, I didn't want to be here today, would be the troubling aspects.
And is it your position you would just rather not be part of this? And please be honest about that.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you think that your views and your thoughts on that would create some sort of concern in how you look at the evidence?
Yeah.
Would you be more inclined to rush through this because you want to get this done?
Yeah.
Would you be able to take the time to look at the facts and look at them, you know, in an impartial manner?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Thank you. And I appreciate your honesty. I really do. Please. And I'm going to forget. Juror number 121, I think. Is that? No, 146. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say...
Officer, would you please give her the mic? I have a loud voice, but not everybody's gifted with such a objective voice as I am.
I hate my voice on the microphone. I think every one of us probably would be lying if we said we were like so excited to be here and wanted to, but I feel like it's just jumping out of my chest. Like if any of us are supposed to be here, we will be here.
Okay.
I'm not particularly excited to be here. I have 5 little kids, but it is what it is. And if we're supposed to be here, we'll get picked and chosen. And
well,
I don't know why, but that's just how I feel about it.
And that's one of the things that I looked at when I saw your profile. You have 5 children.
We have 5 kids, and I run a daycare.
Run a daycare, so.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to use my cheat sheet a little bit, but In addition to that, I guess I didn't have to, it just popped in my head for some reason, but your husband is involved in landscaping.
Yep, we have a landscaping business too.
So do you help in that landscaping business?
No.
No.
I mean, like, you know, invoices and things like that, I do, but not.
So you do paperwork in your free time.
In the free sector.
When you're raising, and I'll get to you in a minute, I just saw the reaction, that was wonderful.
Your number 186, I just saw the reaction. I'll get to you. In your free time, when you're not dealing with your five kids and gathering them up and taking those family responsibilities, you're then taking on the obligation of running a daycare. How many kids do you have in that daycare?
3 to 4.
Okay. And then, like you said, in your free time, when you're done taking care of the kids and taking care of the daycare, you then do the paperwork.
Yeah, when it's needed. Yeah.
It almost sounds like this would be a vacation.
If I'm being totally honest, when the judge said at the beginning you could be sequestered, I was like, oh, it's going to be a spa for me. Like it would be.
Well, I think it was your questionnaire. I read that. You made some comment in the questionnaire saying, you know, LOL or something like that. That was
probably
your...
being a smart ass, but a sequestered would not be like the worst thing in the world.
Okay. And thank you for your honesty. And then juror number 186, you smile and you had some thoughts. Please talk to me about
that. Oh, I was just smiling at her comment of being the free secretary.
Okay, and tell me about that, how that applies to you.
I just thought it was funny that the way she worded it. Oh, it had nothing to do with me.
Okay, is there anybody else? And I know I've spent a lot of time on this. And it is important, and the idea is to get you folks to be, I understand, at least the camera's on me right now, from what I understand, and it's not on you. So you have this wonderful opportunity to speak your mind and tell me what your thoughts are on this, whether or not any of you, for the last time, do you really have any reservations or anything you would like to comment about participating in this process? Anyone? No one? Okay, thank you. I'm going to move on to a little bit of a different subject. And one of the things I need to talk to you folks about is that Mr. Daybell's here today because he's pled not guilty to the charges. And I'm going to ask you questions that may concern whether he's guilty or not. And I don't want you to read from my questions that I believe Mr. Daybell's guilty or anybody else believe Mr. Daybell's guilty. The fact is, we still have to delve into these questions and talk about these things because it's important that we try to get, in this very little time that we're going to spend together, get an idea of what your thoughts are, what you folks are thinking, how do you feel about a variety of things. So please don't read into my questions or assume I'm asking you something because I believe one way or the other. Once again, all I'm trying to do is to just get an idea of the person you are. Right now, I'm speaking, and it's being broadcast everywhere, and people are getting an impression. I don't know if I want to read some of the impressions they're going to talk about me or say about me, but they're getting an impression. And by the same token, I'm going to ask you questions to also get an impression, get an idea of what you think about. And that's what's important. It's important that I do that because it's the way we are able to determine whether we think you're a good fit, whether the prosecutor thinks you're a good fit. And that's part of the overall process of doing this jury voir dire. Juror number 56, you were nodding your head. Is there something you would like to offer in regards to that?
No, just agreeing. You're agreeing. Process.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I'm going to go into a couple of different areas, and please don't, don't read into this one way or the other. Just, again, I think what we're trying to do is be able to build a relationship between myself and all of you folks so that we can be open and honest and free about what our thoughts are without worrying about what people might think. Because quite frankly, I don't care what any of these people think. I could care less, and they're gonna, and it may hurt some of their feelings. But I do want to know what you folks think. It's important, and the state wants to know what you folks think, and it's important because all of us agree that in the end, the state's entitled to a fair and unbiased jury. Would everybody agree with that? could raise your things, your no, not your hands, just your numbers. I'm sorry, folks. I just want to thank you. Thank you. And would all of you agree that Mr. Daybell is entitled to a fair, unbiased jury?
Okay.
Thank you. And on that note, I'd like to start out by asking you folks, is there anybody right now who thinks that Mr. Daybell is guilty or is probably guilty?
Okay.
And that's juror number 48, was it not?
No.
Juror number 48, is that going to impact your ability to make a determination as to, in the end, whether or not Mr. Daybell is guilty, going into this process with the idea that you believe or possibly believe that Mr. Daybell is guilty?
No.
Okay. You're going to be able to be unbiased?
Yes.
Okay. And let's talk about that, because that leads into the next area that I'd like to talk to you folks a little bit about bias. Is there anybody who doesn't understand what the word bias means? No hands.
Okay.
What about the words impartial? Does everybody know what the words impartial means? Yes? No?
Kinda.
Okay. Okay. Juror number 41. When you say kind of, what is your
31?
30, I'm sorry, you're right. 11, 21, 31. 41's next.
No, I'm not sure what impartial is. The first one you said was
bias.
Bias.
Okay.
So I'm trying to think in my mind the difference between the two.
Okay.
So and bias.
What are your thoughts on that? What do you think impartial is?
Depending on what I see, if I trust in that,
okay,
or I don't trust in what I see.
Okay.
Is that kind of what I'm okay looking for?
All right. Okay. Juror number 219. Thank you. What are your thoughts on when you hear the words impartial?
That I would be neutral until basically there's sufficient information to make up my mind one way or the other.
Okay. Okay. Is there anybody who disagrees with that? That was, you must be a teacher or something, because that's a great explanation.
No, sir.
Okay. Is there anybody who disagrees with that? That you must remain neutral. Does everybody agree with that? You must remain neutral? Okay, thank you. So we're going to go back to this issue of bias or impudence. And you're going to hear from a lot of witnesses. Does everybody agree that there are witnesses that can be influenced and sort of coerced into saying things that are not necessarily true or false? Everybody, would you raise your hands to let me see if that's something everybody agrees with, or if you don't agree with it, or your cards, either way? I didn't see at the very back there. Looks like 296. Okay, I'm sorry, I missed it. I'm sorry. Just being influenced or coerced, do you think that just applies to citizens? Anybody think that it just applies to citizens? Raise your hand if you think it just applies to citizens.
Okay.
What about law enforcement? Anybody agrees that law enforcement could be swayed? Maybe they could be influenced to go and testify a certain way to support one side or the other? Anyone? No one thinks that's possible?
Can you restate it? I thought you were
just law enforcement. Do you think the issue of being biased or being influenced, do you think that just applies to ordinary citizens? Does anybody believe that it can also could also apply to people who are in law enforcement? Now, I don't want to pick you out, and I'm please forgive me, number 27, but my recollection when I read the profiles this last week is that your father's a police officer.
Retired
police officer, that's right. Okay. Is that concept something that, just the fact that I bring it up, is that somehow offending you or causing you concern that I'm bringing a statement up like that?
No, I absolutely believe there are good cops and bad cops.
Okay. And in that instance, when we're talking about officers, that police officers are no different than every ordinary citizens, right?
Correct.
And they're susceptible to the same influences and the same manipulations that other people are susceptible to, right?
Yes, correct.
And when you're talking about a criminal case, and you're talking about a law enforcement officer, what do you see as their role in that case?
The same as all of us, seeking the truth and believing the truth without a bias.
Okay. What if they have an agenda in advance of the investigation of cases? Would that cause you concern?
If the police officer has an agenda, yes, that would have a bias then.
Okay.
And as far as a role in a case, would you agree with me that a police officer's role in a case is to investigate the facts and report the facts?
Absolutely.
Is there anybody who disagrees with that? Nobody disagrees with that? What about a police officer or an agency that decides to aid in supporting one side or the other and pushing their own agenda? Is that problematic for anybody? Raise your hand if you think that's problematic. Or raise your cards. I'm sorry, Judge, I guess brought cards. So nobody disagrees with that. So when you hear evidence of that, is there anybody who causes pause for concern as to how they evaluate the bias of that particular police officer? In other words, if you hear that a police officer has an agenda, that he's pursuing a situation where they're trying to develop the fact that someone is guilty rather than investigating the case. In other words, they found their target. Okay? And I don't want to get into.
May we approach?
Yes.
So I've been talking to you folks a little bit about bias.
Mr. Pryor, I apologize for the interruption. We did have a note here. We're having a request. These jurors have actually been here for quite some time. Request for a restroom break. We're going to permit that at this time. So we'll take about a 20-minute recess and time for the jurors to use restrooms if they need. We'll come back on the record once that mid-morning break is concluded. Please rise for the jurors.
All right, please. Back closer.
You can leave them there on the chairs, yeah.
There's more to come in the trial of Chad Daybell. Press subscribe so you don't miss any of our continuing coverage right here from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to lifelock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply. You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to lifelock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply. You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
This message comes from Greenlight. Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. With Greenlight, you can send money to kids quickly, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on what your kids are spending with real-time notifications. Join millions of parents and kids building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get started risk-free at greenlight.com/iHeart.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply. You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply. You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply. You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.